Good morning, and welcome to First Parish Church of Stowell Acton, FPC to our members and friends, a welcoming spiritual community. My name is Neil Saunders, and I serve as chair of the worship committee. Our minister is the Reverend Cindy Landrum, who's taking a well-earned break. If this is your first time with us, we welcome you. We invite you to check out our webpage, fpc-stowe-acton.org, for news and information. You can also sign up there for our newsletter and our email alerts called FPC Announce, and for our email forum called the FPC Forum. The signups are at fpc-stowe-acton.org/subscribe-newsletters. For those of you who are Zooming in with us, we have taken precautions to avoid disruption, so some features are turned off. If you'd like your joy or sorrow to be read, you can send your joy or sorrow to today's helper, Ingrid Holcomb, before that time in the service. And following the service, for those joining us by video or phone, you are invited to join us for a virtual coffee hour, where we will arbitrarily put you in a small group with 4 to 6 other people who you can chat with. And you're also going to have the option to stay in the main room with our guest speaker if you would like to do so. Our virtual coffee hour discussion groups will last about 15 minutes. Those in our parking lot are invited to get out and chat with each other at the end of the service, but we do ask that you maintain a social distance of at least 6 feet, you wear masks, and that you do not gather in groups larger than 10 on any side of the building. We also, at that point, are going to invite cars in our parking lot to honk their horns at the end of the postlude. Children are very welcome in our service today, and just as a reminder, religious education classes will resume in the fall. Here are the major announcements. Our FPC building is currently closed due to the epidemic. If you need to enter the building for any reason, please check with Reverend Cindy or our board president, Katie Weeks. Many committees and groups and adult programs are continuing to meet, but by Zoom. Please check with the chair of your committee or group for further details and watch for announcements on FPC Announce in the FPC Forum. As I said before, you can sign up for both on our website. Now, I have a special announcement from Rick Gentleman.
Our call to worship is by Ted Loader, adapted from his book, Guerrillas of Grace, Prayers for the Battle. Reverend Loader served for almost 38 years as senior minister of the First United Methodist Church of Germantown near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Breathe into me the courage to make something new. Thank you for all I forget are gifts, not rights. Forgive me for all the grievances I remember too well. Save me from the self-pity, the self-seeking, the fat-heartedness, which is true poverty. Guide me if I'm willing, drive me if I'm not, into the hard ways of sacrifice, which are just and loving. Make me wide-eyed for beauty and for my neighbor's need and goodness. Wide-willed for peacemaking and for the confronting of power with the call to compassion. Wide-hearted for love and for the unloved who are the hardest to touch and need it the most. Dull the envy in me which criticizes and complains life into 1,000 ugly bits. Keep me honest and tender enough to heal, tough enough to be healed of my hypocrisies. Match my appetite for privilege with the stomach of commitment. Teach me the great cost of paying attention that, naked to the dazzle of your back as you pass, I may know I am always on holy ground. Breathe into me the restlessness and courage to make something new, something saving and something true, that I may understand what it is to rejoice. And now we'll have our chalice lighting.
Our chalice lighting reading is from Fannie Lou Hamer. Fannie Lou Hamer was a civil rights activist. She was one of the organizers of Mississippi's Freedom Summer in 1964 and went to that year's Democratic National Convention. She was threatened, shot at, and assaulted by white supremacists and police while trying to register for and exercise her right to vote. This is a story that she told. This old man was very wise, and he could answer questions that was almost impossible for people to answer. So some people went to him one day, two young people, and said, "We're going to trick this guy today. We're going to catch a bird, and we're going to carry it to him, to this old man, and we're going to ask him, that which we hold in our hands today, is it alive or is it dead? If he says dead, we're going to turn it loose and let it fly. But if he says alive, we're going to crush it." So they walked up to the old man and they said, "That, this that we hold in our hands today, is it alive or is it dead?" He looked at the young people and he smiled and he said, "It's in your hands." I'd like us now to join in singing together, muted, of course, the opening hymn, number 346. Come sing a song with me. Please follow along for our covenant. Love is the spirit of this church, and the service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. From all that dwell below the skies, let the words of love and peace arise.
From all that dwell below the skies, let words of love and peace arise. Let joyful songs of praise be sung through every land, by every
Great Trees Fall by Maya Angelou. When great trees fall, rocks on distant hills shudder. Lions hunker down in tall grasses, and even elephants lumber after safety. When great trees fall in forests, small things recoil into silence, their senses eroded beyond fear. When great souls die, the air around us becomes light, rare, sterile. We breathe briefly, our eyes briefly, see with a hurtful clarity. Our memory suddenly sharpened, examines, gnaws on kind words unspoken, promised walks never taken. Great souls die, and our reality, bound to them, takes leave of us. Our souls, dependent upon their nurture, now shrink, wizened. Our minds, formed and informed by their radiance, fall away. We are not so much maddened as reduced to the unutterable ignorance of dark, cold caves. And when great souls die, after a period, peace blooms. Slowly and always irregularly, spaces fill with a kind of soothing electric vibration. Our senses, restored, never to be the same, whisper to us, they existed, they existed. We can be and be better, for they existed. We'll have a few minutes of silence.
And now this is the point in our service where we share our gifts. This month, our weekly offering is being shared between three different organizations, Bridges to Malawi, the Gede Village Project, and Shiro's Hangout. So you can donate in three different ways. You can send a check directly to the church. You can donate by text, or you can donate online, and I think Sandy will put up the details for you. While we listen to Sharon Webb and Lisa Fagerstrom with a song for George.
And I have a moment of introduction for that beforehand. Sharon wrote this song in the first person, in memory and tribute to the life and humanity of George Floyd. The words are from actual transcripts of the 9 minutes before his death, and also added reflections on what his last thoughts might have been during his last minutes of life.
Oh, mama, I need you, 'cause I can't breathe. I'm on this hard ground and I just can't breathe. My body is shackled by hatred and power. And mama, I just can't breathe. I hear shouts, cries, and voices from the people nearby. Get your knee off his neck, or he surely will die. They're talking about me, and I feel so alone. 'Cause mama, I just can't breathe. Should we turn him on his side? One policeman would say, I don't get a pulse, I don't think he's okay. But a man in blue keeps his knee on my neck, and mama, I just can't breathe.
I just don't understand it, mama, why they hate us so much. Wait, my last thoughts won't be about them. Oh, my family. Mama, what about my kids?
My Gianna, she's only six. What's she gonna do without her daddy? I see you now, Mama. I'm coming towards you. He need me. So now I need you.
I can't breathe.
Hold your hands out, Mama. I need to be in your arms again.
I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Oh, Mama, I need you, 'cause I can't breathe. I'm still on the ground, and I just can't breathe. My body is shackled by hatred and power, and Mama, I just can't breathe. And Mama, I just can't breathe. And Mama, I just can't.
That's beautiful. This quote is from Across That Bridge by John Lewis. You are a light. You are the light. Never let anyone, any person, or any force dampen, dim, or diminish your light. Study the path of others to make your way easier and more abundant. Lean toward the whispers of your own heart. Discover the universal truth and follow its dictates. Release the need to hate, to harbor division, and the enticement of revenge. Release all bitterness. Hold only love, only peace in your heart, knowing that the battle of good to overcome evil is already won. Choose confrontation wisely, but when it is your time, don't be afraid to stand up, and speak out against injustice. And if you follow your truth down the road to peace and the affirmation of love, if you shine like a beacon for all to see, then the poetry of all the great dreamers and philosophers is yours to manifest in a nation, a world community, and a beloved community that is finally at peace with itself.
And now I want to introduce our preacher of the day, my friend and colleague, Michelle Holmes.
Greetings, everyone. Good morning. I'm greeting you from the front step of the Charlotte Hobbs Memorial Library in the small town of Lovell, Maine, which is the one place I can get Wi-Fi. And please forgive the sounds of the road nearby. Thank you for the lovely invitation and for inviting me into your community today. And thank you particularly to Lisa, my friend and colleague in Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity Facilitate at Visions Incorporated. In these last few months, it often feels that Lisa and I are bonded at the hip, well, actually bonded together on a blizzard of Zoom and cell phone calls from universities, K-12 schools, hospitals, Fortune 500 companies, small nonprofits, museums, churches, sports organizations, and police departments. Yes, even police departments, on what to do in this moment that we are living through. While we're glad that business is good, we truly wish that these calls came at a time of relative calm. By firms seeking to engage in proactive reflection of how to make their workplaces, schools, and cultural institutions reflect in staffing, leadership, and customer base the America that will soon be upon us. That is a nation that is majority of color already our children are predominantly of color. As we sadly know, these calls are coming to us in another five-alarm American fire from the simultaneous combustion of COVID-19, protests in the streets over systemic racism, embodied in the police and vigilante killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Rashad Brooks, and countless other Blacks. As America burns, the President of the United States fiddles, sidelining, contradicting, and censoring the science that could save lives in COVID, building his wall along the Mexican border, scapegoating of Latinx and Muslim immigrants and DACA students, defending Confederate monuments and clearing protesters out of the way to hold a Bible in front of an Episcopal church to symbolize law and order. That particularly enraged me as an Episcopalian. If it were only the White House, that might be taken care of in November. Sadly, it is not. A host of governors, conspicuously from the old Confederacy, aggressively reopened their economies over the objections of mayors in heavily black cities, resulting in the uncontrolled spread of coronavirus across the entire Sunbelt. In Georgia, Governor Brian Kemp, known for purging black voters when he was Secretary of State there, has purged public health during the COVID-19 pandemic. He responded to the uncontrolled spread of COVID-19 by suing Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms for her mandating of face coverings for public health. The symbolism of a white leader telling a black leader who has COVID herself that he knows better than she what to do for her constituents in 2020 is plantation mentality. This brings me to a line in David Psalm 16 that says, "Those who rush to other gods bring many troubles upon themselves." By rushing to the god of money instead of listening to science to suppress the virus, the White House and these governors have brought many additional months of COVID-19 trouble upon themselves and the nation. The nation also keeps bringing the trouble of systemic racism upon itself, because this remains a nation where north, south, east, west, conservative or liberal, the majority of white people still kneel at the altar of white privilege. When Barack Obama won 2 terms as our first African-American president, his share of the white vote was 43% and 39%. When Donald Trump took his place, he did too with 62% of the white male vote and 52% of the white women's vote, even though loser Hillary Clinton would have been the nation's first white woman president. White women voted for Trump despite his boasting about sexual assault. At every age level, young people included, more white voters picked Trump over Clinton. White privilege is a mighty powerful god. As discouraging as this sounds and as angry as I am about this history, I am also filled with some hope. The events of this moment have forced the concept of systemic racism into the mainstream for the first time, maybe since the 1968 Kerner Commission report that said, quote, "White society is deeply implicated in the ghetto. White institutions created it. White institutions maintain it, and white society condones it." I'm encouraged that many white people want to talk about what they can do individually, in their communities, in the workplace and in the cultural institutions. I am hearing a lot of sincerity in the calls we are receiving and visions. For the first time in my lifetime, I'm hearing white people recognize that black people are weary of being asked to diagnose a system that only white people can dismantle by releasing themselves from the god of money and privilege. In 1832, abolitionist Maria Stuart said in Boston's Franklin Hall, quote, "The whites have so long and so loudly proclaimed the theme of equal rights and privileges that our souls have caught the flame also, ragged as we are," unquote. Ever since, black people have diagnosed the refusal of white people to fully share equality. From Frederick Douglass's quote, "The 4th of July is yours, not mine," to Ida B. Wells crusading against lynching, to W.E.B. Du Bois saying in 1903 that the problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line. The problem of the color line is still with us 117 years later. I know that there are many black writers who are New York Times bestsellers and, you know, currently famous writers of the day. It seems like each day we pick one or the other. But I like to constantly come back to James Baldwin, who was prescient many years ago. In 1964, James Baldwin wrote about a 27-year-old young man in Harlem who died of a drug overdose. It inspired him to write about a dead black boy in one of his plays. Baldwin said, "The boy represented, quote, all the ruined children that I have watched all my life being destroyed on the streets up and down this nation, being destroyed as we sit here, and being destroyed in silence. This boy is somehow my subject and my torment too. And I think he must also be yours. It's a terrible delusion to think that any part of this republic can be safe as long as 20 million members of it are menaced as they are. It is extremely unlikely he would be in his grave so soon if he were not black. That's a terrible thing to have to say. But if it is so, then the people who are responsible for this are in a terrible condition. Please note, I'm not interested in anybody's guilt. Guilt is a luxury we can no longer afford. I know you didn't do it, and I know I didn't do it either, but I am responsible for it because I am a man and a citizen of this country, and you are responsible for it too, for the very same reason. As long as my children face the future that they face, come to the ruin that they come to, your children are very greatly in danger too. They are endangered above all by the moral apathy which pretends it isn't happening. We must make the great effort to realize there is no such thing as a Negro problem, but simply a menaced boy. If we could do this, we could save this country and we could save the world. That dead boy is my subject and my responsibility and yours. Please note that in quoting Baldwin, I too, and so many black people I know, are no longer interested in white guilt. What we want is white action that saves our country. Please also note that this is a race against time. America 500 companies are racing to appropriate the language of systemic racism, claiming that they stand with Black people. Many of these statements are hypocritical on their face. For instance, a feature this week on grist.org exposed how the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the nation's biggest lobbyist for industry, sponsored a virtual town hall on equal opportunity, featuring the likes of sports legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and CBS Morning host Gayle King. But in the last month, the same chamber also endorsed 10 candidates for the U.S. Senate, all Republicans, with voting records hostile to civil rights and the environment. The chamber, on behalf of fossil fuel and chemical polluters, opposed nearly every action by President Obama to deliver cleaner air and water to the nation and supported President Trump's rollbacks of them. And these regulations are critical to people of color who disproportionately live with pollution. I don't envy the work it will take white people to push back against agents of systemic racism, but I would hope that in this current calamity, you, meaning white people, finally decide that the cost of rushing after other gods lands us all in hell. My hope is that you make the calculation that it is better to walk through this modern valley of the shadow of death than to leave Black people in it by ourselves. If you make this great effort urged by James Baldwin to walk together through this valley, as we all know from Psalm 23, then we do have a chance to save this country. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Our final hymn is number 168, One More Step.
Words of benediction from John Lewis from his book Across That Bridge. Freedom is not a state, it is an act. It is not some enchanted garden perched high on a distant plateau where we can finally sit down and rest. Freedom is a continuous action we all must take, and each generation must do its part to create an even more fair, more just society. May it be so. We'll now sing our song, Benediction.